Ahead this afternoon's conference call is now being recorded.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. This is the PPSAI Working Group call on the 13th of May, 2014. On the call today, we have Volker Grimmon, Holly Rake, Kristen Dawson, Steve Medelis, Libby Bainey, Michaeli Nyland, Laura Jadid, Don Blumenthal, Tatiana Krasnova, Chris Pelling, David Heasley, Sarah Wild, Darcy Southwell, Roy Belist, Tim Ruiz, Kieran Malachnova,
yes.
John Horton, Alex Deacon, Kathy Kleiman, Griffin Barnett, and Jim Bykoff. We have apologies from Tobias Sattler, Graham Bunton, Susan Prosser, Don Moody, and Amir Elstar. From staff, we have Mary Wong, Amy Bivens, Joe Catapano, and myself, Terry Agnew. I'd like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and back over to you, Don.
I appreciate it. Never mind. I'll send it offline. Like I said, we've got a lot to cover today, and it's been an interesting discussion. An email list since yesterday. Let's dive right into it. I would like to get through this and still reserve some time to discuss item B. This was kind of discussed a little bit before the call formally started. Really appreciate the work that Kathy and James put in on the reveal issues concerning privacy proxy. I'd like to put the discussion that off for now, just so we can focus on C. But again, really appreciate what you guys did over the last week. Why don't we jump right in? I think at the end of the last call, there was, and I'm going to use the word consensus by my definition, which is overwhelming majority. Some people have different definitions for it. So I apologize to anybody who did somebody just jump on with I was getting an echo for a second. Apologize to anybody who thought that I was suggesting that the group agreed overall. That wasn't my intention. Given how important this issue is, though, to our work, I wanted to just provide one last opportunity for everybody to weigh in on the issues. In particular, for lack of a better term, the yes group had not been as active as some others, so I openly invited, in a sense, more discussion from that side. It certainly has generated more discussion. Where that leads is, I guess, what we're going to conclude with today. So I guess it strikes me that we're all still in agreement that, just a second, let me get right to you. We're all in agreement, and correct me if I'm wrong, that even if we do come up with categories, that there isn't a push that all commercial activity, no matter what it is, would be the overall split out category. But beyond that, we still have some discussing to do. And with that, I will call on Libby, who really kind of kicked things off by distributing the paper yesterday.
Thanks, Don. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, thank you for teeing up the issue and for everybody weighing in via email on the paper I distributed. I do appreciate the dialogue, and I think it illuminates a number of the issues that are outstanding, and I guess that's one of the reasons I would urge the group to continue to debate the issue and to talk about some of the nuances that have been raised, whether via email or offline and inside conversations. And I do think there's a lot to unpack here, and James and Steve and others over the course of the last couple of weeks have raised some really important questions about how would this work and whether it's appropriate to do it all. And I think that's a worthwhile debate. And the paper that I issued this week was intended to lay out the opportunity and to describe the issue from a consumer's perspective, you know, recognizing that there is a real value in having consumers understand who they're doing business with. And I think, you know, as we noted in the paper, it's important to strike the right balance and certainly understand the privacy needs and the real rights that people have in various jurisdictions on for privacy purposes, but to otherwise showcase, you know, the real simple fact that, you know, if you're doing business in the countries that we surveyed, you are otherwise transparent. You have to register using the, you know, the legal term register, or otherwise be listed with a government body. And so the point was to show, you know, business is already in transparent based on the many, many laws. And so to the extent that you are engaged in commercial activity, there's a public, an overriding, I would argue, overriding public interest in having that commercial activities, who is information, be transparent, you know, analogous to the business registration requirements in various jurisdictions. And so to sort of set out and show that this, there is, I think, an appropriate or fitting analogy to existing brick-and-mortar businesses consistent with laws. And the hope is just to have a more robust dialogue about how we make the distinction and with the recognition that we should make the distinction. And I think the first question is, you know, can we come to a consensus that, that we should make this distinction and it's worthwhile? A number of folks chimed in on the list that they do think it's worthwhile to make the distinction, but there's difficulty in doing it. And so maybe we could start with that. You know, can we come to a consensus that it's worthwhile to make these distinctions? And then I think we can work on the detail of how do we do it and what cases are there exceptions or nuances that we need to carefully consider. But just as this group's worked in earnest and I think in really good faith on a number of other very technical, tricky issues, I think here, too, we can put our, you know, heads down and work on the difficult, tricky parts. But the consensus, I would argue, should be that there is a value in making the distinction for consumer trust purposes, as we've argued in the paper. And I'd be interested in other folks' thoughts on that. I understand there's diversity of views on this, but at least I've heard or seen from the communications and email that there are some folks that do believe that it's a worthwhile distinction to be made. And if we can discuss that fundamental point and then work on the tricky parts of how to do it and when there might be exceptions. Those rare cases I don't think should be the rule, but rather let's create the rule based on public trust and transparency and then work on the harder parts. Thanks.
Okay. I appreciate that. Yeah, I don't see any other hands up here, so let me just toss a thought out. You suggested whether it's worth, raise the issue of whether it's worthwhile going through the effort. Now, that's my characterization.
And I would argue that it is worthwhile to go through the effort.
Let me finish my thought.
Oh, yes, sure.
Let me finish my thought. How do we measure that? Now, in the paper, it suggested that proxy privacy studies have roughly the same numbers over time, which is roughly 18 to 20% of registrations are privacy proxies. Studies have also shown that maybe 65 to 70% of those are commercial. So now we're down to 14% of all registrations in the GTRB space. Is that a valid way to look at it, or is there some other measure of the point at which it's worthwhile to start making these distinctions? Let me jump to I'm throwing that question out just for consideration. Basically, how are we going to decide what's worthwhile or not, Michele?
Thanks, Don. I think I'm not on mute. Can you hear me?
I got you.
Okay, sorry, my headpiece decided to die a painful death. This entire thing is, I just find, totally exasperating, because this is, ICANN is not a consumer protection agency. Registrars should not be acting as proxies for consumer protection agencies. If the Irish government passes a law saying that domain names are going to be controlled in a particular fashion, then as an Irish company which is happy to abide by Irish law, we will do so. And I suspect that most of the other registrars and others on this call would feel similarly. Now, of course, they can disagree with me. But I think this is completely out of scope. This is going way, way, way beyond what we are meant to be doing. We are meant to be defining accreditation criteria for proxy and privacy services. I don't think it's within scope for us to decide who should be using proxy and privacy services. And I consider this entire conversation to be a massive waste of time. Thanks.
Okay, that was pretty clear. James?
Hi, Don. James speaking. And just wanted to perhaps echo some of what McKelly has mentioned. This is a difficult issue because I can tell that people feel very passionately about it. But I think that, you know, their passion in particular by bringing some of these issues into this PDP in particular, but ICANN in general, is misdirected. There's no way to wade into these waters without ICANN and, by extension, their contracted parties becoming enforcers of content regulation. It's unavoidable. If we say that we're not the pivot point or the break point is not the type of registrant, then we have to look at the website. We have to look at what the website is doing and how people are using the website. I think that there are, as I think Volker and others have pointed out, there are certain jurisdictions that already require these things on the website. There are jurisdictions that require transparency in a financial transaction. Trying to centralize all of that and use registrars, web hosts, or privacy proxy services as a sort of a choke point for bad things that are happening on the internet, I believe is just kind of it's trying to solve use the wrong tool to solve the problem. So not surprisingly, I do agree with what McKaylee said, that we had a very narrow scope and target here, which is to define the practices and the requirements of how these services are delivered. And I think, expanding that into, creating classes of categories of customers and uses, I think is well outside of the scope of what we're trying to do. Thank you.
Okay. Now, I'll just point out, though, that I think the DNSO charged us to look into the issue. So this issue of whether there should be categorization or not is part of what we're supposed to be doing. Kathy?
Hi. Let's see. I wanted to comment that I thought that we had reached agreement largely last week and even the week before, that in general there was agreement across a number of stakeholder groups represented on this working group, that we did not want to create categories of registrants up front for proxy privacy services, that every group that we know, it seemed to be the working group's reflection as well as the WHO is review team's reflection, that every group, commercial, non-commercial, and individual, all have legitimate legal reasons for seeking proxy privacy registrations. So it's interesting to look at this paper and see that it's not just even the type of registrant that we're looking into. It's almost like, because one of the areas that I don't think we've touched on, if we have, we barely touched on it, is that commercial entities engage in non-commercial speech, and it happens all the time. At .org, for example, lots of commercial companies will register .org domain names for their foundations or for educational and research material that they're publishing. So that whole really, really screwy line, commercial entity engaged in non-commercial speech, does not appear to be what this white paper is addressing. It dives rather into the purpose, how the domain name is being used. And so I'm going to agree with McKaylee and James, who say this is outside our scope. And also that it gets us into something that will keep us here for the rest of our lives. It's really the purpose, and then the changing purposes, and is this what ICANN should be doing, what the registrars are going to be doing? So I'm going to push back up. I think we had agreement on the threshold question, and that this wasn't the direction we agreed on. Thank you.
Well, let me just suggest that by looking at last week's transcript and reading last week and listening to the call, there clearly were some individuals who did not agree. So I think it's a stretch to suggest that we had agreement. Right now, I think we need to look at the work of this group and not go back to the work of other groups and how they looked at the issues. Steve?
Yes, this is Steve Metalitz. Just had a couple of points. First, I tend to agree. I don't see how this could be outside the scope because we were asked these questions, and they're in our charter. So obviously we don't all agree on the answers, although I think it is fair to say that up until today, the vast majority of the people that have been discussing it on the calls have agreed. But that obviously isn't everybody. But I'd like to focus and just make sure we know which questions we do have to discuss. I note that question C2, and I don't know if that I'll just read it. It says, should the use of privacy proxy services be restricted only to registrants who are private individuals using the domain name for non-commercial purposes? And as I look at this paper, and I think this was echoed to some extent in the in some of the discussion online, page 27 says, the question should not be whether a registrant is a commercial entity, but rather whether they are using the domain name for commercial purposes, irrespective of whether the registrant is registered as a legal person or is simply an individual. So if that's the position of Libby and the others who don't want to answer the threshold question, who have a different view about the answer to the threshold question, can we at least take the C2 question off the table? Because it sounds as though we have agreement that the use of privacy proxy services should not be restricted only to registrants who are private individuals using mm-hmm. the domain name for non-commercial purposes, because this paper seems to indicate it could also be allowed for corporations that are using the domain name for non-commercial purposes. Is that correct? In other words, are we in agreement that the answer to C2 is no? Thank you.
I would tend to think so, yeah.
So I'm really asking, maybe Kieran is next. Kieran, Libby, and others who have a different answer on the threshold question, do they agree about C2?
Okay, that's fair. Yeah.
Thanks.
I see what you mean. Kieran, you want to dive in on this or something else? Kieran, are you on mute? I'm sorry, Kieran. You're not coming through at all. Oh, having computer issues. Okay. Does anybody else want to chime in here? Holly?
Yeah, I tend to agree with Kathy and. Surprisingly, I suppose, with McKaylee and James, I thought the question was, as Steve put it, do we want to limit or not? And we said not, and part of why we said no, we don't want to limit, is it became far too difficult to even think how you would distinguish, given the breadth of national laws, given the breadth of what various countries will define as commercial or non-commercial. I'm at a loss to understand how you could actually, if you wanted to say yes or for that matter no to somebody registering with a privacy proxy server, how you would do it. And I think it's one of the reasons that we said no. And my also understanding was somewhere in there we were thinking about where the expert working group is going. And I think we were happy to notice that where they were going was saying, well, basically, the issue is about accreditation of the privacy proxy server. It's about the privacy proxy server gaining sufficient, well, gaining correct who is information such that either they hand over the information or they cut the service off if there was illegal activity. Now, I thought that's sort of where we were getting to. I'm apparently wrong, but, you know, I stand to be corrected. Thank you.
I won't say you're wrong. I just think some other folks
have
differences of opinion.
Yep.
And let me just suggest that we and I'm referring to a lot of people are somewhat on the same page concerning where the conversation left off. But I think now a standard by which to differentiate a mechanism has been a standard, not a mechanism, has been suggested. And I guess part of what we need to look at today is even that approach feasible. Again, part of the purpose of this call is just to make sure we hit this subject exhaustively. Chairs had some concerns about that in relation to an issue that really is so pivotal to proxy privacy. John?
Hi there, Don. Can you all hear me?
I got you.
Yes.
Okay, great. I'm on a new headset. I just wanted to respond to the question that I think you posed to Kiran that I think she wasn't able to respond to, possibly because of technical issues. I think a strict reading of question two, and then if you look at the paper that Libby submitted, is that that's correct, as you summarized. The proposed solution was to try and be as narrow as possible, and recognizing that some commercial entities may not be engaged in the commercial use of a domain name. So strictly speaking, the answer to question two would be that it wouldn't be restricted only to registrants for private individuals. But I don't think it would really make sense to just say, there's a consensus to question two that the answer should be no, because I think the real purpose of the paper was to try and dig into the meat and the bones of how differentiation would work, and to and really try to narrowly tailor a solution as narrow as possible. So hopefully that's the direct answer to your question.
I appreciate it. Sorry, went back on mute there for obvious reasons for a second. Kiran? Kiran?
Great. So this is Kiran. I'm sorry for earlier. I guess my microphone on my computer does not work. I agree with what John.
Just going to say, apologize for picking up the wrong pronunciation there. Go ahead.
Oh, fine. No one ever gets my name right. That's okay. So the answer that John just gave is pretty mirrors what I would have responded to with Steve, although I do think that even his questions merit a little bit more exploration before I shoot off the hip. But what I did want to respond to initially was on the question of whether this is in scope, I think that's it's a very strange argument, because the entire rights protection mechanisms, all of the work that went into the new GTLD program in that regard is all based on consumer protection. And I also agree with your statement, Dawn, about it being in the charter and therefore it being in scope. I also wanted to just quickly touch on the issue of content regulation. I would say that in a lot of ways, a lot of what we do as far as examining rights and legality and illegal activity and all of these issues requires a certain amount of content examination. It's not possible to draw a super clear line. For example, when I can develop the rules for the URF, for example, whether or not we are looking at whether a trademark is being used illegally, you have to look at how it's being used. What's the content of the website? Is it a non-commercial free speech website? Well, then, it's not appropriate to file a URF or a UDRP at that point. So I think, again, we're drawing these really black and white lines between this isn't within our scope, this isn't appropriate, this isn't what ICANN is doing, but historically it is what we do, and it is a necessary part of what we do. And I think all of that is a red herring on the real issue, which is that this is complicated, it's worthy of discussion, and I think that we should not be throwing this away at the threshold level, and we should be exploring it more steps. Thank you.
Okay. Let me suggest that we're not throwing anything away, as I suggested in email. No matter how today's call ends, this issue is going to inevitably come up again in some of our other topics. And what we're doing now is just preparing templates that are ultimately going to be used to prepare a report. So can somebody go on mute there, please? So really everything we talk about over the next however many months is going to be revisited, nothing else, when we write. I was going to say something else, but let me defer. Let me go to Kathy and then James and see if I need to or not. Kathy?
Great. Thanks, Don. It's hard when a paper comes down the day before a meeting. It would have been nice to have more time, but it's hard to know. And Don, let me ask this to you as the chair and to others in the group as well. There are things in this paper that, if we do have to delve into this, it just doesn't make sense. So the idea of applying the same rules to Internet-only businesses operating in their jurisdictions as to those with brick-and-mortar presences. Well, what about the millions and millions of businesses that don't have brick-and-mortar presences that are protected by an array of different legislation, including home-based businesses run by seniors, run by women, mom-owned businesses? Where do they fit in all of this? I think the threshold question was designed to see if we needed to go into all these other questions. And so I'm still not sure where we are on all of that. But there was a lot of agreement on the last two calls, the one that Graham chaired last week and others. And I think the one Steve chaired the week before. So we've been on this issue for a while. And I really thought there was a lot of agreement that we're not about categories and classes. And where the comments came out as well from the stakeholder groups. So I just wanted to ask that all that be revisited as well, if we might. Thanks, Don.
Well, as Kathy, I appreciate what you're saying, but as I suggested before, I didn't see quite the unanimity, and I'm going to avoid the word consensus now. baffles me we spent so much time talking about that term, but I didn't see quite the unanimity that you're suggesting in it, and I saw a distinct lack of input from a fairly significant viewpoint, and now we're getting that today, and this will conclude the discussion, direct discussion under question three of these issues. As to the paper, whether you agree with it or not, it's the comments there are as legitimate to enter in as if they were said verbally on today's call. But obviously, though, there's plenty of room to agree or disagree with what was said or the logical steps or whatever else you want to in there. James?
Hi, Don. James speaking. Thanks. I have really a question that I'm struggling with, and I would maybe pose it to you and to ICANN staff and to the group. But the question is that, we're having a fairly spirited discussion on this list and on this group, and then, we have some papers being submitted. My question is that, just looking only at our service, we have millions, if not tens of millions of customers and some significant portion, 30%, 40%, I don't have up-to-date figures, are commercial entities and then are engaged in some sort of commercial activity. My question for you is, how do we best go and get the reach out to those stakeholders who might not be aware that this work is ongoing and that their service continuity of their service may be in jeopardy, or how do we measure their value of this service, whether it's something maybe they signed up for explicitly or maybe they didn't know, or maybe they use it and forgot it, but they bought it and forgot about it or something like that. I mean, do you have any? Is there any precedent within ICANN when we're discussing something that has the potential to impact millions of businesses, globally? How we would go out and ensure that we are responsibly gathering the other side of these absent stakeholders, and ensure that their voice on these issues, and particularly if there's something we haven't thought of or covered, is captured in this dialogue. Because I'm concerned that we have a very small, very vocal core folks within ICANN, which ICANN itself is a very small and vocal organization, but it ripples out into the larger internet economy. And I think that perhaps that's something that we can enlist the help of staff to measure or to gauge some of that feedback.
Interesting point. I've kind of wondered that myself. For what it's worth, I gave a talk on what we're doing last week, and if nothing else, had all sorts of informal feedback. But other than the formal comment periods, once we get rolling, I don't know if there are other mechanisms. Marika or Mary? Marika?
This is Marika. Not specific to James's question, but it did bring to mind, indeed, as we're outlining options and I think a possible path forward on this issue, noting that there is disagreement what the answer may be, would be to still walk through the different charter questions that would allow staff to record the different viewpoints and possible points of contention on those, and specifically call this out as one of the items on which public input is requested as part of the initial report, noting that the working group didn't reach agreement. These are the different viewpoints that have been expressed on the specific topic, challenges identified, like the one James just suggested, and then work with the different, I think, groups within ICANN as well to, for example, try to encounter or encourage input on that, for example, through ALAC. I mean, they're representing a large segment of end users, reaching out through their networks, specifically talking about that question and trying to get input from groups on the specific question may help gather additional information and viewpoints on where different groups stand on this. And it may also be a way forward on our current conversation so we can actually document as well what the different positions are on the questions in this category, and indeed specifically highlighting as well the challenges which may help get additional input as part of the initial report public comment form. Just a suggestion.
Well, certainly I would expect us to document pros and cons in the template, and our initial report will be out there for comment, but I guess, and I'm going to paraphrase what James just suggested, are there other mechanisms by which, except informal conversations, we can reach out and try to get opinions before that point? I haven't seen it done, so I'm curious if there's any formal way to do that. Okay, let me go to Steve.
Yes, thank you. This is Steve Metallitz. All right, getting back to C2, I think I've been hearing that we're in agreement the answer to C2 is no, and that commercial entities should be able to use privacy proxy services for non-commercial purposes. This brings us to question one, which is really, I think, the nub of the disagreement about use for commercial purposes, regardless of who is registering it. I'd like to raise another point here just to clarify what the position of those who would answer yes to who think that under question one there should be a distinction. Would that distinction be imposed at the time of registration, or would it be done retrospectively at the time of some sort of later challenge? As I read the white paper, which I did skim, admittedly, I haven't had a chance to go through it in detail. The proposal seems to be that you would have to say, I don't intend to use this domain name for commercial purposes. At the time you signed up for a privacy proxy service, I don't intend to use this for commercial purposes. And then if later it appeared that you were, someone could come in and object to your use of the proxy service. In other words, it would be kind of a reveal proceeding, as opposed to the proxy service, privacy service, conducting some type of investigation or making some type of presumption about how the service would be used. So I guess I'm asking, is that a correct characterization, Libby or Kieran, of your position, or John? Again, I'm just trying to see if we understand what it is you're proposing. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Kieran seems to be on board in the chat with what you just suggested. I'm going to cut this after John so we can at least spend some time on D.
Okay,
Stephanie?
Sure.
Oh, wait, who was that?
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Stephanie.
I said after. Oh, I'm sorry. I got you. Yes. Stephanie?
I apologize for dragging us back to the white paper here, but I just want to register my discomfort with having this paper dropped in. And I, of course, immediately flit into the Canada section because I had spent quite a bit of time talking to Libby a couple of weeks ago about the Canadian situation. And I would just like to register that it's not accurate. So I think if we're going to be taking papers, then we need to have a different process for putting together. And I can give you the chapter and verse on what's inaccurate in that section. The entire omission of small business, which does not have to be registered except in the province of Quebec and then only for some particular types of business, that's the heart of internet commerce in the future, particularly in developing countries. So I cannot believe we're continuing to have this discussion in such a one-sided way. There are many other ways to deal with the risk of bad behavior on the with proxy registration. There's no need to try and preemptively figure out who's the bad guy up front. Thanks, and I promise I won't bring it up again. But let's take the paper off the table, unless you're going to have a committee review it and check it for accuracy.
Well, let me just respond to that. Anybody is free to submit anything, whether it's verbally or in writing. as far as I'm concerned. Anybody else is free to correct it either on a call or otherwise. You know, it would be different if we were up to crunch time on getting report out, but there is plenty of time for response as we go forward. You know, I think there are plenty of folks in this call who can see the strengths and weaknesses in that paper, and I don't know how much it needs formal discussion on the call. One person's opinion. John?
Sure, thanks. So let me first respond to the question of technically how this would work. And yes, this was addressed in the paper, but to summarize it, I think there is an analogy, not a perfect one, but a rough one, with the way that complaints about inaccurate or falsified WHOIS records have worked. And one of the things that we've heard from registrars, and I think is a really good point, is that you can't expect registrars to assign staff to actively monitor and look at and verify every single WHOIS record every day of the week. Now, I say that knowing that there are going to be some new requirements that we, you know, recently have. But having said that, I think that the way that it would make the most sense would be at the time of registration for the registrant to be informed at the point that you are going to actively sell goods and services and in process a financial transaction on this website or, you know, one that the website points to, like PayPal.com or something like that, you are no longer allowed to use privacy or proxy services. But, again, the registrar wouldn't be responsible. It doesn't seem realistic to me to require registrars to actively monitor for the point at which that commercial activity begins. But then I think the registrar should have a mechanism in place under the structure that we've proposed to respond to any complaints. So to some degree, it is an honor system. I think a lot of what we would call Internet governance is an honor system. But that seems the most reasonable and doable way for it to work, in my view, and Libby or Kieran or others, feel free to weigh in if I'm wrong on that. I also just want to respond to Stephanie's comments briefly on the paper, since LegitScript helped with the paper. We certainly stand by that. I would agree with James's comment that the you know, our paper is, I think, just like any other comment that is being submitted via the chat or the email chain. But we stand by that. And at the same time, Stephanie, knowing of your expertise in this area, and I know Libby already thanked you for the assistance that you provided in discussing these issues with her, we would welcome, I think we'd all welcome, over the email chain, any comments you have on that. But, you know, we would certainly stand by that paper. Thanks.
Okay. Appreciate it. Like I said, I was going to cut the queue after John. Sorry, Kieran, if you want to enter in the chat, that would be great. Yeah, I think we've covered the issues that were raised, well, that clearly have been expressed before in one way or another by people who have been in favor of some level of commercial categorization. Again, we wanted to make sure that there was a full airing of those. Why don't we move on to D, except I want to raise a question from the outset of the call for consideration, which is at what point is it worthwhile to even be going through these processes? And how do we measure that if it's even a legitimate question? But since it was raised, I want to toss it out there for reactions in chat or in email later, or ignore it if you don't think it's even something we should be part of the equation. And if we could clear hands, I would appreciate it, to remove any uncertainty as we get into D. Okay, you know, if I can step back to save my voice a bit, if Mary and Marika could pick up on outlining D.
Hi, Don, and hi, everybody. This is Mary. So what we have on the screen here is the draft template for question one of Category D, and as you recall, Category D deals with contact points by the privacy or proxy service, obviously different from the registrars as such. So as with all the other templates, what we've done is pulled together some background information that we thought might be relevant as you consider this question. This includes information from the various WHOIS studies, or at least some of those, as well as some information that we recently got in that you reviewed from the survey of PP providers that the EWG did. We've unsynced the document, so you should be able to scroll through it. And the third piece of information that we have is, as usual, from the WHOIS review team as well. And finally, here right before the chart, there's a short insert from the status update from the EWG pending its final report. So hopefully all that is useful as you look through the responses earlier from the survey that various of you and your groups have provided. And as we said, Category D is about contact or contact points, and the question one here under consideration is basically, what are the measures that should be taken to ensure two things? One, contactability, and two, responsiveness of the providers. And recalling here that providers mean privacy and or proxy service providers. Don, I don't know if it would be helpful to go through all of this in the time that we have, or do you want to start the discussion more generally?
When we start the discussion more generally, if just a second. Start it more generally. I don't think it pays to read point by point. It's always tough when you follow up a very contentious issue with one that doesn't seem to have all that much significance to it. Bad word, significance, but... Well, let me ask, obviously, if you're going to... Well, the first question. Contactability and responsiveness by whom? From whom? The people seeking information? The registrars? And then I think the second question is... let me stop there. Who needs to be doing the contacting? That might help frame how we go with this. Steve? Appreciate it.
Yeah, this is Steve. I think, I don't know if this is entirely responsive to your question, but I think one measure that should occur is that there should be a public register of the accredited providers, just as there is a public register of registrars who are accredited, and there's contact information for them there. And if that contact information doesn't work, then there's some remedy, and potentially in terms of the accreditation of the registrar. And I think there needs to be the same thing for an accredited provider. So, for example, you know, there needs to be, we're going to get to reveal and relay and so forth, but there, you know, if I feel that I have the grounds to ask that a customer's contact information be revealed to me, and again, we'll come to those criteria of what I would have to show, I have to have some place to go with that and some entity that will respond. And if I can't reach the service provider or the service provider just never responds, that I think is a big problem in terms of, or it needs to be a problem in terms of their accreditation. So that's really one aspect of this, that there should be a publicly accessible registry of accredited providers and the service provider should have to respond to inquiries. And that would be true even if the inquiry is coming from a different jurisdiction or not one of their customers. It, obviously, they should be responding to customers too. But if someone has a reveal request, for example, there should be a requirement that the accredited provider respond promptly. So I think that's part of the response on this question. Thank you.
Appreciate it. James?
Hi. I thought Stephanie was ahead of me, but I guess she dropped her hand. So James speaking for the transcript. I agree with Steve. I think that there should be some requirement to respond to inquiries, either from customers, law enforcement, third parties. This is modeled after some of the requirements in the current RIAA. I think it's, where we maybe would have a divergence of opinions is, saying, thank you, we've received your inquiry, but we've decided not to, reveal this based on your inquiry or based on your standing or based on your jurisdiction. I think that is a response. So they may not get the response that they want, but they should receive some sort of a timely answer. They should be the privacy service provider should be contactable and should be reasonable in fielding those types of inquiries.
Okay, Kathy?
And a follow-up to both Steve and James. Here, the balance, the contactability and the responsiveness, yes, of the proxy privacy service providers, I think we'll see general agreement on that across the working group. But also, what's the balance? If somebody's contacted you 20 times on the same issue, if the same attorney's reached out, or if there's a level of frivolousness, or, as some said, if it's coming from jurisdictions with requests that may not be legal or legitimate requests in the jurisdiction that they're going to. So a law enforcement in another country asking for information that they wouldn't be entitled to in the jurisdiction of the registrant or the registrar. This is where things get interesting, and this is where I think the diversity and background of the group, of this working group, will be very helpful in thinking about this. But contact points make a lot of sense. Thanks.
Sorry. How much will the second point you raised there be part of our discussion in Reveal? How much should we be focusing on just how do we make sure that they can be contacted and respond and, as opposed to the circumstances under which they should respond?
Interesting. I'm glad Michaela's in the queue.
And with that, Magali.
Thanks, Tom. And thanks, Kathy. Okay, I mean, first off, I think there's no issue with the concept of responding, but I have massive issues with the concept of doing anything beyond that. If we get a court order issued by some random court in some foreign land, and I don't care which land that land happens to be, we're not going to take action on. We're going to politely tell them to give us a court order from an Irish court. I mean, the thing with what circumstances should the proxy privacy provider respond? I mean, I would assume that in most circumstances they should respond. But I think, as James intimated, I mean, maybe the response that they provide might not be what the person contacting them is looking for. But that's life. I mean, you can't force me. You might be able to oblige me under contract to respond, but you can't oblige me under contract to, you know, for example, I don't know, sell a domain name or respond to all queries for this, that, and the other. So I'm not too sure exactly where we can go with that, but I think, you know, putting an obligation that the provider responds shouldn't be too much of an issue. Thanks.
Let me ask this, and I really don't know. Should we be looking, I mean, are there similar provisions, as was suggested, for just a list for registrars? Are there provisions that we could look to for guidance on this entire question?
Don, this is James. Mind if I weigh in on that question? In fact, there is one in particular that comes to mind, which is a new requirement in the one of the transfer policies. It's called the Transfer Emergency Action Contact, or the TEAC, that registrars have published amongst themselves in the ICANN radar database. And the thinking there is that in the event of a hijack, there should be someone at the registrar who is responsive to requests from other registrars in a transfer emergency where they have a claim of hijack. Registrars are required to respond, I believe it's within a certain number of hours. But, you know, I think the policy does state, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that the registrar on the other end is going to agree with you that it is a hijacking, or it's no guarantee that they will reverse the transfer. But it is set up as a emergency, sort of a red phone hotline that registrars can use in those emergencies, and the other side has to pick up the phone.
Does this have to be a named person?
Sorry, it's an email address. I used phone as an analogy, but it is in fact an email address that's published in the radar database.
Okay, but is that, so is it I guess a generic address, or is it?
It could be an individual or a team. It does specify that whoever is responding is authorized to. Authorized and capable of addressing hijack issues. So beyond that, there's no prescription on who can answer the phone or who can answer the email.
Don, this is Michaela, just adding to that, because, I mean, this came out of a PDP that I happen to chair. I mean, the idea behind the transfer emergency contact, I mean, it stemmed from dealing with very kind of time-sensitive issues involving domain hijacks. I mean, kind of scenarios where a domain would be transferred on like a Friday night to a small registrar who might not be working over the weekend. And that would, you know, take Amazon.com or something similar offline for, you know, 72 hours. I mean, there is a precedent there, but the key thing, of course, is that it's the contact isn't published to the world. It's available to other ICANN accredited registrars, and it's available to ICANN staff and compliance. Thanks.
Okay. I think we are remarkably close to being able to put something together here. But it's 11 o'clock, so I'm not going to say what it is. We'll send something out in the next few days. I suspect that we'll spend a little bit of time on D next week, when I again will be off someplace else. But I would expect we'll move on even past that. Appreciate your time and your consideration and keeping things civil. It just had the potential to not be. But I think it was, I hope it was a good discussion. And we will continue on. Thanks for your time.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, John. Thank you.